Welcome to another deep dive. Today we're going to be tackling a pretty big topic.
Oh yeah.
In the world of Christian education, and you know, it's something that churches are always kind of grappling with.
Absolutely.
Especially in a world that's constantly changing.
Right.
So we're trying to figure out how churches are adapting to grow disciples in, you know, this modern world we live in.
Yeah, that's a huge question.
It is a big question.
A lot to unpack there.
Yeah. And you've given me some really great material to work with.
Well, I'm glad you think so.
Yeah.
Should be a good one.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
So we're diving into this PhD thesis by Craig Duncan Mitchell.
Okay.
And it's called Reforming Christian Education in Congregations as the Praxis of Growing Disciples for a Missional Church.
Catchy title.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So he actually visited four very different churches across Australia.
Wow.
And looked at how they're approaching this challenge of, you know, growing disciples and
reforming Christian education.
Rethinking Christian education.
Yeah, that's a great way to get a real world perspective on this.
Absolutely.
I mean, Australia is a really interesting context for this because it has such a diverse, you know, religious landscape. So I'm really curious to see what he found.
Yeah, me too. So in chapter 5 of his thesis, Mitchell starts by kind of setting the stage and talking about this big challenge that the Uniting Church in Australia is dealing with, which is an aging population.
Right, which is something that a lot of churches are facing.
All over the world.
All over the world, yeah. It's a big one.
It is. And so churches are really realizing that they need to think beyond just Sunday school.
Yeah.
And think about how faith formation happens across generations and in all aspects of life.
Right. It's not just for kids anymore.
Not just for kids anymore. Yeah. It's about lifelong learning.
Exactly.
And that's where Mitchell brings in this framework by Richard Osmer.
Okay.
Have you heard of Richard Osmer?
Nah. Yeah, he's a big name in theological education. So what does he have to say about this?
Yeah. So Osmer identifies four frames for analyzing a church's teaching ministry.
Okay.
So there's practices, curriculum, leadership, and then pilgrimage.
Pilgrimage.
Which refers to like individual faith journeys.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. So these frames I think are really helpful because they give us a way to break down this complex topic.
Right.
And really see how all these different elements work together.
It's like a lens through which to view the whole thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I like it.
So with those frames in mind, let's jump into the first church that Mitchell profiles.
All right.
This is the Queenscliff Point Lonsdale Uniting Churches.
Okay.
And they're located on the Bellarine Peninsula in Victoria.
Oh, beautiful spot.
It is beautiful. I've been there.
Yeah. It's known for its, you know, picturesque seaside towns.
Mm-hmm.
And a pretty large retirement and holiday population.
Yes.
Which definitely shapes the church's approach to ministry, I'd imagine.
I think so.
Yeah.
Definitely. And so leading these churches is Reverend Carrie Lingham and Charles Gallacher.
They're a husband and wife team.
Oh, that's nice.
I know.
Yeah.
And so Mitchell highlights how they've really kind of shaken things up.
Okay.
In terms of practices.
All right, how so?
So, for instance, they actually moved away from the traditional two Sunday services.
Interesting.
To make space for a Wednesday evening gathering.
Okay, so a midweek thing.
The midweek thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a meal.
Yeah.
Followed by a contemplative, creative worship service.
So not your typical Sunday morning sermon.
No, not at all.
Well, what do they do?
It's a lot more like art, poetry, reflection.
Oh, wow. So they're really appealing to different learning styles and preferences.
Yeah.
Maybe even reaching people who wouldn't typically go to a Sunday service.
Right.
Interesting.
Exactly. And they also created these prayer and reflection installations.
Installations.
Yeah, both inside and outside the church buildings.
What, like art pieces?
Yeah, like art pieces, poetry, different things to just kind of spark contemplation.
Oh.
And these are open to the public.
So you don't have to be a member of the church to experience this. It's like they're blurring the lines between sacred and secular spaces.
Yes.
Inviting people to kind of encounter spirituality in these unexpected places.
Exactly.
I like that.
And that seems to be a theme with this church because in terms of curriculum, they're less focused on formal programs and more on creating this culture of hospitality and open dialogue.
So it's more about the experience than like a set curriculum.
Yeah, and they actually call themselves a community rather than a congregation.
Oh, interesting.
Which I thought was kind of a subtle but important shift.
It does suggest a more inclusive, welcoming approach, you know?
Right.
Less about doctrine and more about shared experience and exploration.
Exactly. And they weave spirituality into everything they do.
Really?
Even their popular op shop.
Like a thrift store.
Yeah, like a thrift store. It's become a real community hub.
That's awesome.
I know.
That's a great example of how a church can kind of integrate faith into everyday life.
Right. And connect with people in a non-threatening way.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to leadership, they really emphasize a permission-giving approach.
What does that look like practically?
So they encourage members to experiment and try new things, and they use meetings for both visioning and education. They even bring in outside ideas to kind of stimulate thinking.
So they're not afraid to kind of think outside the box?
No, not at all. And I think that's a key element of fostering a culture of learning.
Absolutely.
When people feel empowered and supported to take risks and explore new ideas,
right,
they're more likely to discover their own unique gifts and passions.
And contribute to the community in a meaningful way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It creates a sense of ownership and shared responsibility for the direction of the church.
I like that.
So it seems like their key takeaway is that breaking from tradition and embracing a more fluid and inclusive model can lead to deeper engagement and a more vibrant faith community.
It's a powerful example of how, you know, adapting to the needs and aspirations of the community while still, you know, staying grounded in faith can lead to a thriving and relevant church.
All right. Are you ready for a change of scenery?
Always.
Okay. Let's head north to the Gap Uniting Church.
Okay.
This is in suburban Brisbane.
All right, so a very different context.
Very different context. Yes. This is like a middle to upper class community with a strong sense of community already.
Yeah.
But what caught my eye was that the lead pastor,
okay,
Reverend John Rule, has a background in teaching English as a second language.
Oh, that's interesting.
I know.
I wonder if that influences his approach to communication and teaching within the church.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
So at the Gap, they're all about intergenerational worship.
Okay, what does that look like?
So think babies to grandmas. All learning and growing together.
Oh, that's lovely.
I know. And their worship services are very visually engaging. So they use a lot of symbolic objects, banners, even like trees and bricks.
Wow. So they're really creating a multi-sensory experience.
Yes.
Appealing to different learning styles.
Yeah.
Making the abstract more concrete. That's really interesting. It makes you wonder how many churches actually consider the impact of visual learning in their services.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So they also have these months of preaching and teaching.
Okay.
Where they really kind of deep dive into specific themes. And they use popular books to spark discussion.
Oh, like what kind of books?
So, for example, they use Tom Wright's Surprised by Hope.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And they don't just talk about these ideas.
Right.
They also take action.
Okay.
So they incorporate these action reflection learning experiences.
Like what?
So, for example, they do walking on country trips.
Oh, wow.
To learn about indigenous history and faith.
So connecting faith with real world issues and personal experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's powerful.
Yeah. And their leadership structure kind of reflects this emphasis on action as well.
Okay.
So they have these mission teams that drive the church and give people ownership over areas they're passionate about.
So it's a very kind of decentralized, collaborative approach to leadership.
It is. Yeah. It's very use your gifts philosophy.
Yeah, I like that.
Me too. And it seems to be working.
Good.
Their key takeaway is that combining this thoughtful teaching with hands-on experiences and creating a culture that values everyone's contribution can really lead to a dynamic learning environment.
It's a model that recognizes that faith formation happens not just in our heads, but also in our hearts and hands.
Yeah.
And it's most effective when it's integrated into every aspect of our lives.
Okay, before we move on to the next church,
yeah,
I just want to pause for a moment.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, like, what are your initial impressions? Anything standing out to you so far?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really struck by the diversity of approaches we're seeing, even just in these first two churches. One is embracing this more fluid, community-centered model.
Right.
While the other is very structured and action-oriented.
Yeah.
And yet they're both thriving.
You know, it's really interesting.
It's a good reminder that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to Christian education.
No.
Each church needs to find what works best for its context and its community.
And I think a key ingredient is this willingness to be innovative and adapt to the changing needs of the world around them.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, with that in mind, let's shift gears again.
Right.
And travel to Clare Uniting Church in rural South Australia.
Okay.
So this is a regional center with a mix of farming families and retirees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's led by Reverend Simon Dent.
Okay.
And Mitchell mentions that Reverend Dent actually experienced a personal shift in his understanding of leadership.
Really?
Which had a significant impact on the entire congregation.
Mm, That's interesting.
Yeah, it seemed like a real turning point for the church.
So what happened?
So one of the first things they did was recognize that they needed to cater to different preferences.
Okay.
So they offer a blend of traditional and contemporary services, but they also really prioritize ministry to young families.
That's smart, especially in a rural area where, you know, churches are often facing declining congregations as younger generations move away.
Exactly. So they're being proactive and recognizing that need to reach beyond their existing members.
It makes you think about the challenges of intergenerational ministry and how to create spaces that feel welcoming and relevant to people of all ages.
Right.
It's tough.
It is tough.
Yeah.
And their approach to curriculum is also interesting.
Okay, how so?
So they have these focused teaching missions based on specific resources.
Okay.
Which they use in both worship and small group settings.
Oh, that's good. So it provides continuity between Sunday morning and, you know, smaller group discussions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they also place a strong emphasis on personal spiritual disciplines, like Bible reading, prayer, and reflection.
So it's about equipping people to kind of nurture their faith daily.
Yes.
Not just on Sundays.
Not just on Sundays. It's about developing a rhythm of spiritual practices that sustain and nourish faith throughout the week.
I like that.
And remember that shift in Reverend Dent's leadership?
Yeah.
So he moved away from a minister-centric model and focused on discerning God's mission for the church and then equipping members to participate in it.
So he's empowering the congregation to take ownership.
Yes.
And become active participants in ministry.
Exactly.
Rather than just relying on the pastor's direction.
Right. It's about shared leadership and responsibility.
I like that.
Yeah. And so the key takeaway from Claire seems to be the importance of adapting to changing demographics.
Right.
Being open to new ways of doing church and empowering members to use their gifts.
It's a reminder that the church is not a static institution.
Right.
But a living organism that needs to evolve in order to thrive.
Okay, we've got one more church to explore.
Oh.
But we're going to save that for part two.
Okay, a cliffhanger.
A little cliffhanger.
I like it.
It's a unique story that deserves its own space to unfold.
All right, well, I'm intrigued.
Good.
This has been a fascinating deep dive so far. It makes you realize how much creativity and innovation is happening within churches all around the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's really inspiring to see how these churches are responding to the challenges and opportunities of our time.
Definitely.
So stay tuned for part two, where we'll visit our final church and see what other insights emerge from their story.
Looking forward to it. Welcome back to this deep dive into how churches are approaching Christian education.
You know, we've seen some really interesting examples so far.
Yeah, we have. Mm. We had that coastal community blending faith and art, that suburban church really embracing hands-on learning.
Right.
And then that rural congregation really trying to adapt to changing demographics.
Yeah, trying to stay relevant.
Yeah. But now we're shifting gears completely.
Yes, buckle up, because we're heading to a remote Aboriginal community in far north Queensland.
Wow.
This is the Mapoon Aboriginal Congregation.
That's a world away from the churches we've looked at so far.
It is.
I mean, how do you even approach Christian education in a context so deeply rooted in Indigenous culture and traditions?
And that's the question that Mitchell really tries to explore in this chapter.
Yeah.
So Mapoon is led by Reverend Michelle Cook, who's an ordained deacon.
Okay.
And Mr. James Hughes, who's a youth worker.
So both Anglo-Australians working within an Indigenous community.
Yes.
That's another layer of complexity to this whole story.
It is.
I mean, it raises questions about cross-cultural ministry, you know, sensitivity respecting Indigenous traditions.
Absolutely. And their practices really reflect this unique context.
Okay. How so?
So Sunday evening worship is the norm there.
Okay.
And it often involves picking people up.
Picking people up.
Yeah, because they don't have a dedicated church building.
Oh, so they're literally going out into the community, meeting people where they are.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is.
That's a powerful image of a church that's not confined to four walls.
Right. And they gather in this kind of undercover area at the local school.
Okay.
Which makes it accessible and, you know, adaptable to the climate.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah. And the congregation itself is unique.
Oh, so.
It's mostly children under 12.
Really?
With a few adult women.
Wow. So a very different demographic than what we've seen so far.
Very different.
Yeah. And that presents a unique set of opportunities and challenges.
Absolutely. It really highlights the importance of intergenerational ministry.
Right.
And finding ways to engage young people.
Especially in a context like that.
Yeah. And so their approach to curriculum is really interesting.
Okay. In what way?
They focus on basic biblical teaching and faith formation.
Makes sense.
Yeah, recognizing that many in their congregation are new to Christianity.
Mm-hmm. So meeting people where they are,
right,
on their faith journey.
And they do this through a blend of music, storytelling, interactive activities.
Okay.
And rituals that resonate with the local culture.
That integration of culture and faith is so crucial.
Yes, especially in an indigenous context.
Right, where spirituality is so intertwined with traditional practices and beliefs.
And it's not about imposing this foreign faith.
Right.
It's about finding ways to express the Christian message in a way that's meaningful and relevant to their culture.
It speaks to the universality of the Christian message,
mm-hmm,
while still honoring the unique expressions of each culture.
Yeah. And they actively involve young people in planning and leading worship.
Oh, wow.
It's not just about listening.
Right.
It's about participating and taking ownership.
That's a brilliant way to foster leadership development and create a sense of belonging.
And Mitchell specifically mentions how they encourage faith expression through traditional dance and stories.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It is.
It's a beautiful example of how faith can be lived out through the lens of one's own cultural heritage.
Yeah, it challenges this notion that Christianity has to be expressed in a certain way.
Right. It's about embracing diversity and recognizing the beauty of different cultural expressions.
And when it comes to leadership,
okay,
the focus is on modeling and mentoring.
So showing young people what it means to live out their faith in a practical, everyday way.
Yes. Walking the walk.
Yeah, exactly.
And empowering young people to make choices about their lives and futures.
Right.
So they organize exposure trips and exchanges with other churches.
Really?
Sometimes as far away as Tasmania and Korea.
Wow. Those experiences must be transformative for those young people.
I think so.
You know, broadening their horizons, exposing them to different ways of living out their faith.
Mm-hmm. It's about fostering a sense of connection to this wider community of believers.
Yeah.
So I think Mapoon's story really highlights the importance of contextualizing faith.
Absolutely.
Embracing cultural expression and investing in the next generation of leaders.
It's a powerful reminder that the Christian faith can be expressed in a multitude of ways, and that every culture has something unique to contribute.
Okay, so we've journeyed to four incredibly diverse churches.
We have.
Each with its own unique approach to Christian education.
It's been quite the trip.
It has.
So what are your thoughts? I mean, are there any common threads that you're seeing emerging from all of these stories?
Yeah, I think one of the big things is this emphasis on community generating learning.
Okay.
And learning generating community.
Right.
These churches aren't just focused on imparting knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It's about creating environments where people can learn and grow together.
Yeah, where faith is nurtured through relationships and shared experiences.
Exactly. It's about fostering a sense of belonging and shared purpose.
Right. Recognizing that we're all on this journey together.
Yeah, and I think another theme is this idea of double loop learning that Mitchell highlights.
Okay, remind me what that is again.
So it's not just about solving problems as they arise.
Right.
It's about questioning assumptions and finding new ways forward.
So like Queenscliff moving away from two Sunday services.
Right, or Claire intentionally reaching out to young families.
Yeah, they were willing to challenge the status quo.
Yeah.
And really think creatively about how to be more effective in their mission.
And that kind of shift takes more than just good ideas.
Right.
It puts a certain kind of leadership.
Yeah. And we saw that in Reverend Dent's transformation at Claire and that collaborative, empowering approach at The Gap.
It's about recognizing that everyone has something to contribute.
Right.
That the wisdom and gifts of the community are essential for growth and innovation.
And it's about creating spaces where those gifts can flourish.
And that brings us back to this idea of community generating learning.
Yeah.
And learning generating community.
It's a beautiful cycle.
It is.
It's recognizing that faith formation isn't a solo sport.
Mm-hmm.
It's a team effort.
Yeah. We need each other.
To question, to challenge, to encourage, to celebrate the journey together.
So as we move into the final part of our deep dive, I want to kind of turn it back to you, the listener.
Okay.
What are you taking away from this exploration?
What sparks your curiosity?
What challenges your assumptions?
Perhaps one of the churches resonated with you.
Or maybe a specific approach sparked an idea.
Whatever it is, don't let the learning stop here.
Welcome back to this deep dive. You know, we've been talking about these churches in Australia and how they're tackling this challenge of Christian education.
Yeah, it's been really fascinating to see how each church is really taking a unique approach.
It is. And I think it shows that there's no one-size-fits-all answer.
Absolutely. Every context is different, and every community has its own needs and its own strengths.
Exactly. And I think one of the most important themes that's emerged from these stories is this idea of what Mitchell calls double-loop learning.
Right. It's not just about fixing problems as they come up.
It's about going deeper.
Yeah, questioning the assumptions.
Yeah, challenging the status quo.
And being open to, like, radical change.
And we saw that in action in a few of these churches.
Oh, yeah.
Like when Queenscliff decided to ditch the two Sunday services.
Right, or when Claire really prioritized outreach to young families.
They realized that just kind of tweaking things around the edges wasn't going to cut it.
Right. Sometimes you need to rethink the whole system.
Exactly. And that kind of shift requires a certain kind of leadership.
Oh, definitely.
We saw that in Reverend Dent's transformation at Claire and that collaborative, empowering approach at the Gap.
It's leadership that's not afraid to step back.
Right.
And to trust the community.
To let go of some control.
Yeah, and to embrace shared responsibility.
And I think that really ties into this other big theme of community generating learning and learning generating community.
It's a beautiful cycle.
It is. These churches aren't just focused on individual growth.
Right.
It's about creating environments where people can learn and support each other.
Mm-hmm. Where faith is lived out in relationship.
Yeah, it's recognizing that we need each other.
Absolutely.
We need each other to ask questions.
To challenge each other.
To offer support.
To celebrate the journey together.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into the world of Christian education, I want to leave you with a few final thoughts to kind of ponder.
Okay, I'm ready.
What are you taking away from this exploration?
Yeah.
What sparked your curiosity?
It resonated with you.
What do you do differently in your own context?
These are all good questions to think about.
And I hope that this deep dive has inspired you to keep exploring.
Keep learning.
Keep questioning and keep diving deep.
Because there's always more to discover.
Always. Thanks for joining us.
See you next time.